Road. AI Magnified, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly sponsored by Fitzgerald Power, adding value always. FitzgeraldPower.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Hello and welcome to our third edition of AI Magnified, our special series where we are looking at the future of artificial intelligence with an emphasis on what's happening here in Ireland. And I'm delighted that this series is proudly sponsored by Fitzgerald Power, a firm that thrives on creating the best accountancy service to its clients using technology, industry insights, and innovative solutions. Fitzgerald Power helps businesses unlock their full potential and make more informed decisions. Now, I'm delighted that our three guests today on the third edition of AI Magnified, Elaine Coughlan, or Elaine Collin, as I in Cork would say, from Atlantic Bridge, Sean Mitchell from Ubotica, and Patrick McNally from Equal One. And we'll tell you all about what Ubotica and Equal One are in a moment. But Elaine, I just want to start with you, because last week we were talking on this podcast about how businesses are going to have to change and have to adapt. Today, I want to talk about the Irish businesses who can get involved, get on board the AI train and provide services and products. But is there really going to be a chance for them, given the vast sums of money that the likes of Microsoft and all the various other big tech companies are investing? OpenAI, you're involved in Atlantic Bridge in funding venture capital, but can you actually get involved in AI from Ireland at a small level?
Well, thanks a million, Matt, for having me here today with two great Irish companies that are really global leaders in AI. So that alone tells you we absolutely can, but you're also absolutely right. Ireland will not be able to compete with the massive hyperscalers like Microsoft and OpenAI and Google, etc. The levels of CapEx investment that are going in now at the moment to build the infrastructure for AI, which is the GPUs, the chips, the servers, the data centers, is now moving a data center from a cost of about $2 billion to $20 billion. And as Patrick was saying just shortly before we came on air, OpenAI are talking about building a $100 billion AI data center. So I think where Ireland can and will compete is at the application layer, where we will leverage the investment.
The application layer
will be companies like Sean and Ubotica, where they're making putting AI up on chips and software on satellites to process data, or Patrick in Equal One, where they're using quantum to compute, which will lower speed up processing speeds, first of all, and lower power that's required. So we will have, that's all at the application layer. And there'll be many more what we call edge AI processing, where applications will do, you know, use generative AI at the application layer, just like in all the applications on your iPhone. So I think that's where, and in enterprise, so CRMs, so companies using Salesforce or using other applications, all of those will be AI-ified, AI magnified, to use the name of the podcast. So that's where Ireland's opportunity is. And if you look at the history of the internet, in 1999, 2000, and you look at all of the SaaS companies with applications and enterprise, new software applications, that was all built on the internet. So, and Ireland didn't build the internet. So you can see it's going to be a very similar path, except most people believe that the productivity and the efficiency gains that are going to be made and the adoption of AI is going to dwarf what happened with the internet.
So you're confident that Irish businesses can piggyback this express train?
If we get our act together, yes, and if we focus. And Scale Ireland did a survey recently and we asked our members, we have 750 members and I'm on the board there, 82% said they are deploying AI, working on AI, trying to figure out how they can adapt their business, their products for the adoption of generative AI, because it too can bring massive productivity and efficiency gains to both them and to their end customers. And I know from being involved with companies like Irish Life at a massive scale, the number one focus area for them, AI. So, and also if you look at the number of companies that are spending on AI now globally, there was very few spending in excess of 100 million. In the last year, there was over 60 companies in the world that are spending alone 100 million in a year on just pure AI investment from an application level, you know, understanding their data, etc. And that's only going to grow. So okay. that's where the opportunity is for these companies.
Okay. Sean, tell us a bit about Ubotica, please. We've heard a little bit there from Elaine, but you explain it in a bit more detail, please.
Yeah, pleasure being on, Matt. So very simply, Ubotica is enabling satellites with AI capabilities. So what we've seen over the past decade, there's been a big rollout of infrastructure there, particularly for Earth observation satellites in these big constellations. So they're imaging the Earth, but at the moment they just take pictures. They send them all down to Earth when they're over a ground station. And these are all stored in data centers. They're replicated. They're processed by thousands of entities worldwide. And over half of it is just clouds, for example. Right?
These photographs put to?
So they're put to, they have massive opportunity for impact across pretty much every vertical in the economy, whether it's forestry management, natural disasters, agriculture, insurance, energy,
fishing,
aquaculture, and desalination plants. You name it. Most of those sectors can benefit from utilizing satellite imagery, but it's very brute force today. So it's very expensive. It's very slow. It's a very technical process. And by putting AI capabilities onto the satellites, you can triage that data at source. You can extract insights immediately. You can get them to end users in minutes instead of days. You can manage all that data and all that waste in the data centers and so on to massively lower the costs and power there. So we've already done this successfully now, proven it out. We've flown 9 missions so far, and now that's starting to scale up into larger volumes. And we think this will really transform that industry and the way that people can make use of space data and have some real impact.
So what's your business model? Do you sell this service to who on the satellites?
Yeah. We really have two. The first is going into the satellites. So in that case, we license software and we also provide hardware that goes into the satellites for processing. But really managing that end-to-end cradle to grave, I guess, of the AI application. So, for example, if we want to do a vessel detection application, we have to get that model. We have to train it on space data, which generally doesn't exist. So it's quite a difficult problem, and manage that throughout its life cycle on the satellites, for spotting what they call dark vessels, for instance, which are vessels doing nefarious things with their transponders turned off and things like that.
So could this be of use, for example, to naval services or police forces to track drug smuggling?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the, you'll have seen, obviously, in the media, I'm sure you've covered it yourself a bit recently, around the scale of the problem, even that the Irish Navy has in monitoring an area that's 10 times the size of Ireland, and obviously have limited resources. So, they have to pull in intel from every possible source, and space data has to form a part of that strategy. Really, it's ideal for covering large areas, and they have a lot of responsibilities. Obviously, trafficking is one, but protection of infrastructure, a lot of offshore energy infrastructure, undersea cables. Of course, they have all the fisheries enforcement and things like that to worry about as well. So, a very difficult problem. And they, certainly can benefit from.
Yeah. So excuse my ignorance in this, but does that mean, for example, that you can have all the photographs in the world, but it might have been that people were sifting through them and they were way behind real time by the time they got to see things, that you can now apply artificial intelligence, which will work out what needs to be looked for and will be able to alert humans almost immediately?
That's exactly it. I mean, today, the way it works is, they take the pictures, they get them to ground stations. You have analysts who look at them, process them, get them into a form that's, easily readable by people. All this processing, and typically it's a day or two before you get the information. Now, if you're trying to spot a dark vessel that's trafficking narcotics, information 2 days later, not much good to you, right? So, it's quite transformative to be able to get that now in 5 minutes from having taken the picture. You can have, and just the information you need. You don't even necessarily need the image. It's like, well, there's a dark vessel at these coordinates, right? So it's very ingestible as well. And that really opens up lots and lots of new applications.
Where did the idea for Ubotica come from?
Well, it came from, I guess, the genesis of the team was a previous company called Movidius, where we were doing these kind of edge AI applications. So we were building them right from the silicon on up through the application and deploying to markets like drones, augmented reality, security cameras. The security cameras market in particular, you know, is very similar to this Earth observation situation where they initially were doing all the processing inside the data center, but then started to move it out to the edge and ultimately into the cameras themselves. So we're doing the same thing now to the extreme edge, I guess, of space. But Intel acquired that company at the end of 2016.
That was one of the big indigenous Irish tech sales success stories, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a good deal. I think good deal for the team and for the technology, which is still has a lot of life within Intel. But I guess we had just started looking at this space application at the time. But for Intel, you know, it's not a high volume semiconductor target market for them. So at that point, Ubotica was founded then separately to basically pursue that that space opportunity.
And how difficult is it? How much money do you need to start a business like that and develop a business? And where do you get it from?
Well, it has become a lot more accessible. I mean, the space industry in particular used to be the domain of nation states, you know, and they're doing satellites that cost billions. You know, access to space with the likes of SpaceX and so on has come down, you know, orders of magnitude, lower costs. You know, you could have your own satellite, Matt, for $5 million. And
is that all?
You know, yeah. you could have it for the next few years. So if you have that cash lying around, you can have your own satellite. So,
but you're mistaking me with somebody else. Go on.
But I guess the point being that, you know, access to space has really come down in costs. And so we have this whole new space industry and this explosion of innovation now and lots of startup companies. So, you know, yeah, you still need some millions in backing and venture capital and so on, which you get from the likes of Elaine and venture
else?
Capital. Well, I mean,
the States, the likes of Enterprise Ireland help you.
Yes, absolutely.
They do, yeah,
and yeah. And we are Enterprise Ireland has also.
It's a key point. I think Ireland, you asked the question about can we compete here? And I think we can if we pick the sectors. And as you can see, you'll hear from Patrick as well. But investment in deep tech is key. And what a lot of governments are doing are significantly ramping up their investment, because this is also strategic from a sovereign tech perspective. You can hear from the types of applications that Sean's doing, whether it's naval, whether it's monitoring, whether protecting infrastructure and being able to do that real time via satellites, as opposed to waiting 2 days. And also being able to cover with technology the ground that you can't cover with ships. And you know, we have a huge problem in our Navy, as most countries do, in just, you know, being able to build the ships on time, man them and get them out there. So I think it's a real problem that you're helping to solve. And there's a climate aspect to it too, because he's also monitoring things like, you know, algae blooms and forest fires and mapping. You can imagine mapping those kind of things really quickly and giving that information to responders real time, literally on their phone, you know.
And these are things that have to be seen from the air, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, because and generally because you're trying to cover, you know, such large swaths of territory, right? So it's very difficult to do that, you know, from the ground, even with drones and things like that. It's quite limited if you're trying to cover a large area. And satellites, from the distance that they are above the Earth, it's the ideal way. You know, a single picture from a satellite can cover, you know, tens of kilometers by tens of kilometers, you know, and they're scanning those constantly. So you can cover those big areas. And like Elaine says, more and more countries now, with, you know, the latest geopolitical developments, mm-hmm. are doing their own sovereign constellations of satellites. You know, we see Portugal, Spain, Greece, you know, lots of countries.
And you can sell to all of them.
Absolutely. And but the point is, they now see it as a critical piece of sovereign infrastructure that they can't be dependent on, you know, some other company or some other country providing that kind of infrastructure, because that could be unreliable in you know, a condition of war or something like that.
Investing in it, Elaine, because it suddenly just strikes me that if you were to run a potential investment like this through an AI program, it would probably tell you not to do it on the basis of past performance. You actually have to make a human decision as to back a business like this. So given that it's high risk, tell us about the criteria that you'd apply.
Well, your question is absolutely right. And you know the way they hallucinate these models, or can hallucinate. So it probably would hallucinate on that question too. I mean, if you think of what Equal One and Sean are doing in Ubotica, you know, Equal One, maybe 200-300 million might be the total investment needed. A company like Movidius, Sean, how much did we raise? 100 million?
It was over 100.
Yeah. Over 100 million.
Before you sold to Intel.
Yes. So you can see that these take significant investments. So what we do at Atlantic Bridge, we try and work with many investors, including government, including Enterprise Ireland, including ISIF and TMA, including now the European Investment Council, who have a direct investment policy where they'll invest directly in these companies by way of grant and investment. So we are upping our game from a Europe and an Irish perspective, but we need to do more. So for instance, today, about 20% of the money in the Irish VC market goes to deep tech. Whereas if you go up to the Nordics, it's 40 or 50%. So, you know, if we want to have these technologies and these companies and grow and build them in Ireland, which we can do. And when you hear what Patrick's doing on Quantum, incredibly impressive, but we have to invest.
Let's bring in Patrick, because you've been waiting patiently there. Thank you.
Very patiently.
When he's a patient man.
When Elaine says deep tech, I suspect you're in deeper tech if you're into quantum computing. What the hell is quantum computing?
You know,
and how does it relate to AI?
Well, listen, thanks for having me. There's a perception that quantum is this crazy, strange world that nobody really understands. And there is an element of truth to that.
See, I think it comes out of Quantum of Solace, the Bond movie.
Yeah, probably people
think along those lines.
Great movie.
But ultimately, quantum computing and what Equal One specialize in is building the next type of computing resource. So you're familiar with CPUs, compute processing units that have been around for some time, the Intels of this world, every chip you have from a smartphone or your laptop. And then we had the arrival of an accelerated computing, which was called GPU. Famously NVIDIA, and the, I suppose, impetus for this marked increase in AI. And the third type of compute that we're working on is called quantum compute. And that's looking to harness quantum mechanics. So instead of creating bits that you're familiar with in standard computing, we talk about qubits.
You better explain. I do not have this background, and I suspect many of our listeners don't either. So
what it means for...
In easy to understand, Ladybird, please.
Ultimately, what a quantum computer will do is provide a level of computational power that's greater than anything that exists today for certain specific use cases. And those use cases will apply to certain industries, whether it's pharmaceuticals or life sciences or finance, but also to AI. And if we look at AI, AI uses a huge amount of compute power. What we're seeing is an increase in data centers across the world to be able to support the demands from the general public. The ChatGPT that we all talk about is one element of that, but you've got a variety of different AI tools. And what we're working with on the AI front is to build a quantum computer that will support an increase in efficiency of these AI models that we're starting to deploy around the world.
Okay, because it came up in a previous episode and I brought up the estimate that I had been told that every one ChatGPT search is the equivalent of 8 Google searches. You think it uses even more power than that, does it?
And before I mentioned to you, I'm hearing different numbers, up to potentially 20 times of an energy requirement for a ChatGPT search versus a standard Google search.
Why?
The amount of compute that's required. So AI is nothing new. Siri, Alexa, Google, Netflix all use versions of AI. What we've seen in the last couple of years is this notion of gen AI or generative AI. And the word generative means it's generating something new. So if you break it down, the GBT, G is for generative, P is for pre-trained, and T is a transformer. So it transforms information to give you a new output. And that requires a huge amount of compute power and data to be able to answer a simple question and provide a very complete, detailed response.
Okay, so again, excuse my simplicity in this, but if I may put a question into Google, for example, doing a Google search, it will give me a range of sources of articles or whatever of information that's stored. Whereas what ChatGPT is doing is almost amalgamating all of those and writing its own answer.
It's like having the most knowledgeable person in the room right beside you instantly. And they the notion of this GBT is they transform, this transformer architecture, use a lot of compute power to do that work. It's another computer program, just a very sophisticated, very intelligent computer program. The reason we call it ChatGPT is because that's the medium with which we chat to it, like a chat bot.
That's how we interact with it.
That's how we interact. So what we're seeing in the last couple of years is a huge interest in the potential of GPT and various forms of that to provide greater efficiency in a range of industries. That requires compute power. At Equal One, we believe quantum computing will help to address some of that demand that we're seeing from data centers, frankly, to support the compute requirements of the future. And the nature of quantum computing allows us to do calculations an awful lot faster than what's called standard compute. As an example, let's say you're, I don't know, trying to get out of a maze. A standard computer will explore every single avenue one at a time. A quantum computer will allow you to explore all of the possible avenues at the same time. So what you're seeing is a 20x reduction, not just in energy terms, but also in the time it takes to perform that calculation. And what we see with quantum is the potential for quantum as a hardware to help accelerate and reduce less energy because we're providing a new element of compute to data centers.
So you're not essentially an AI company, but you're feeding into AI, is it?
So we will support AI. The use case of AI is something that people are very interested in when it comes to quantum computing. They've recognized that the energy consumption continues to increase.
Well, GPU, the general processing unit, the engine, think of a GPU or a CPU in your laptop there. It's the engine in that laptop. It's processing all of this data. That's why it gets hot, you know? That's what's at work. That's the chip. But GPUs were built for gaming.
Originally
for gaming. So you think about your kids' Xboxes. They all have GPUs. That was the market because what GPUs were good at doing was high graphics. That's what the graphics. Graphics are hugely intensive, you know, from a load point of view and a processing point of view. And gaming, think of all the action and all of the, you know, the characters and the rich gaming environments. So GPUs were actually built for that. And now what we're doing is we're loading up literally racks and racks and thousands of GPUs from NVIDIA powering AI. They weren't, and because they were found to be very good at processing multiple lines of data at the same time, which is what gaming ultimately is, which is what you were explaining in terms of the processing, you know, power of GPT. So what we're building it on is sucking up energy, you know, huge water shortages in the likes of California. You know, how sustainable is that, I suppose? So it'll definitely improve. And I think NVIDIA will improve, you know, the next generation GPUs, etc. But lots of companies now are looking at quantum as the way forward.
Wasn't Moore's Law, correct me again, please, if I'm wrong, but about doubling the capacity on every microchip more or less every year. Is this sort of an extension to that?
This is an exponential increase in that potential of compute. The nature of quantum computing, and this is where people think, what is this crazy quantum stuff? It allows you to process multiple calculations at the same time, whereas a standard classical compute is binary. So it will do one calculation at a time. So the example I gave of the maze, instead of having to do every single possible avenue, did I get out? No. Try the next one? No. That takes time. If you had a computer that could do all of them at the same time, you're using an awful lot less energy and you're getting the results much more quickly. So at Equal One, we are working with companies who are looking at how a quantum computer can help move AI forward. For example, in Ireland, we're working with CEDAR, the Irish Center for AI, and they're looking to explore areas because this is an emerging space. We forget that ChatGPT, OpenAI, came out two and a half years ago.
Yeah.
We've seen a huge increase. We mentioned NVIDIA. We've seen what their stock has done because they have the processor GPU that is uniquely adapted to building these AI models. However, if we want to democratize AI and enable AI to be used by industries and enterprises of all sides, we have to find a compute model that is potentially more affordable, will get the job done more quickly, and use less energy. And that's what we're doing. At Equal One, we're bringing our first quantum computer out in March next year. But it's been a journey. We've been on this journey now for 6.5, 7 years, And like you said earlier, Matt, we've been very lucky to have the support from Enterprise Ireland, Atlantic Bridge, Matterwave, another VC that we work with. And we are really excited about the future of this, the applications of quantum, not just for AI, but for other use cases as well, drug, pharma, et cetera.
And look, I think NVIDIA been working with you, you announced last week. You know, they're the guys with the market today. So that signals where they think the market's going, you know, quantum.
Yeah, does this mean you're going to have to engage in partnerships effectively with much bigger players?
We're building an ecosystem of partnerships and we're signing MOUs with different partners across the space because quantum is an emerging space. And like in any type of application, you have the hardware and the software and then those who will use that for a particular customer application. We focus on the hardware. That's where our area of expertise lies. And we will partner with the right software companies and ultimately the right customers to show where a quantum value can play within how they deliver their technology to their business.
What's the competition? Presumably there must be other brilliant scientists around the world thinking you're doing something similar.
There is a lot of competition, and I would also say there's a lot of collaboration. Quantum has come from academia, frankly. It has come from the universities and various what are called modalities or ways of trying to control and manage a quantum bit, a qubit, is the key to unlocking scalable numbers of qubits to really drive what's called a quantum advantage. We've placed our bet on silicon CMOS. That frankly is the engine that has powered all of the chip successes we've had over the last 50 years. And we are using a silicon system on chip technology, essentially putting qubits on the same type of silicon that powers GPU or CPU, slightly differently for quantum, but through a standard global CMOS process. So what that means is we'll be able to manufacture chips and ultimately quantum computers at scale.
You're the chief commercial officer. What's your background though? Are you in tech, engineering? What is it?
I am a sales techie, would probably be my. I started with Gateway back in the early 90s, then moved to Dell, and I was lucky enough to support Dell as they grew throughout Western Europe, managing all their enterprise customers in Western Europe. Then I moved into startups. So I have a mixture of understanding what enterprises are focused on for end use case, where I can add practical value. And then from a tech perspective, quantum is something I've always been interested in. I remember 5 years ago going to a quantum conference in California, and I genuinely thought quantum was 10, 15 years away. And just last year, I got back interested into it. So I sat into some of the master's programs here in Ireland, in Trinity, for example, and I realized that quantum was getting to a stage where customers were starting to go on a quantum journey, could see value in bringing quantum into how they manage and deliver applications and services to their customers.
But I put this with you and Sean, I mean, the speed of change that's going on with technology, how difficult does that make it to develop a business out of Ireland?
I think you just have to be open to, you know, adopting whatever's the latest innovation, really. I mean, if I look at Ubotica's business and, you know, if Equal One produces a computer that has advantages for us, we'll put it into satellites, right? We'll use it because we're, you know, there's a voracious appetite for processing, for power efficiency, et cetera. You think of a satellite platform, you know, it powers itself off solar panels that have to charge up when it goes around in orbit and get a bit of sunlight. So they're very restricted in their resources, very challenging system. So any kind of efficiencies we can get in the compute capability, we'll take it, right? So we're not, you know, we don't have religion about that. We'll adopt whatever we see as the state of the art that can get an advantage.
To your point on starting a business in Ireland, listen, Ireland is a smaller country than most, a smaller economy than most, and we don't maybe have the same access to talent that you would have in Silicon Valley. But that doesn't mean that the talent isn't here. And what I've seen within the team that I've joined are some world-class people who have, frankly, worldwide recognition on the success that they have done, whether it's in the field of academia and quantum or in semiconductor and processing. So we've had some great successes. You mentioned Movidius, DecaWave, and others that have come out of Ireland. So there is a real area of expertise here in semiconductors. Ireland is a great place for European and others to come and work and enjoy working. And I don't see this as an impediment. That said, back to Elaine's point, we do need to make sure we have the funding to be able to deliver on the vision we want to do. And for our part, we're about to go out actually on a funding round. We're probably going to raise about 50, 60 million. And we're very confident that we will be able to raise that. We're seeing
big sums of money in the Irish market, but are they big internationally for what you're looking to do?
We may be based in Ireland, but we're a global company, and that's how we see ourselves. Our use case and our applications are, for my part, geared towards the Fortune 1000. And whether they're based in London or Dublin or Austin, Texas, is irrelevant. We will work with those customers, understand their application use case, see value and traction with that, and then build to make sure we can deliver a product that meets those requirements.
Sean, how much money does Eubotica need to grow?
Well, we're not as focused on the hardware infrastructure. Yeah. So actually the amount
of money,
if I compare it to, say, Mobidius, you know, we needed more than Eubotica is likely to need. But it's still, you know, a couple of tens of millions, I would say. But you know, it's definitely less than some of the hardware players.
Elaine, you're an accountant by training and background, aren't you?
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, bad one, yeah.
A bad one, okay. Do you regard yourself as a tech person? Or
I do. Well, after 30 years, yeah. I mean, you get to call out these engineers, you know. That's where the finance background really comes in handy. But I'd say a couple of points on that question. You're right, it's a global business. And, you know, this is where Ireland has to realize how fast the world is changing and be plugged into that. So if you look at both of these companies and you look at Atlantic Bridge, there's a couple of themes there. First of all, university research and how key that is. Both of these companies came out of deep research over the years. I mean, Sean was doing AI back in 2007, we invested, before 2010, right? So, and Dave Maloney was doing their CTO, super guy, PhD in neural networks, the whole basis for, and then they moved into computer AI vision in 2013 with Movidius. He's been very modest, you know, about the success of that company. Intel's AI roadmap is built on that technology in that company. And that's obviously, Intel didn't move fast enough or do enough in AI, which is why they're, you know, in the challenging, troubled situation today. So first thing I'd say is research. Second thing I'd say is, you know, our own fund, the early stage fund run by Jerry Maguire and Helen McBreen, helping spin out and commercialize these technologies from the research is key. So both companies aren't just in Ireland. So Equal One is in the Netherlands. We've got research teams, Canada, the US, and Ireland.
We've built centers of excellence where we see particular talent.
Talent, yeah.
But the HQ is here.
Yeah.
And ultimately, just recently, we signed a strategic agreement with TNO in the Netherlands, which is a center of excellence for quantum computing. And their team joined us. So we now have another office in the Netherlands.
And
so,
Micheál Martin opened your office in Canada a few months ago. So, you know, a team there as well, a really great quantum team. And Sean, the last company we had, the US, Romania, Ireland again is the headquarters. Where else had we operations? Asia, Hong Kong.
And with Eubotica, we're in Spain, we're in the Netherlands, Tunisia, would you believe?
Yeah.
And we've also incorporated in the US and starting to ramp up there as well.
So I think that global, so you must have the IP, the research, great technology, great scientists, great people. You must be global. And that's why we work in Atlantic Bridge on bringing in kind of international capital.
We spend an awful lot of time talking about the foreign tech multinationals in Ireland and all the taxes that they bring in and all the rest of it. Is it important to have them there for Irish companies that want to work with them? Is it easier because they're based in Ireland?
I mean, I would see this, I mean, they may or may not be working directly together, but I think there's a clustering effect. And that's something that, you know, if you look at Silicon Valley, they were always very good at. And Elaine was alluding to some of this, where you have great universities, availability of finance, you know, startup companies and scaling and larger companies. And of course, people move around, you know, and people who have successes, they might go back then into academia for a while, they might spin out to another startup. And but you get this clustering, and it's kind of a virtuous
circle. See, the reason I ask that is because there is a fear been expressed now in some quarters that the next rounds of investments by some of the major multinational companies won't take place in Ireland because we are restricted in the data centers that they need for next generation AI. And if that was to happen, would it make it much harder to have that cluster effect Silicon Valley for Ireland, as much as we also would worry about losing the tax revenues from those companies?
Absolutely. I think we will have to. So to secure our position, really strong position in the last 20 years in data, Ireland and data centers, but you're absolutely right. They're moving to the Nordics and they're moving to the Middle East, where power is cheap. So we must solve the wind, offshore wind energy infrastructure issue, because that is a source of incredibly cheap, sustainable power for Ireland for these data centers. We must also then adopt the best, I think, and most advanced AI technologies to lower the power requirement. So, you know, adapting quantum, companies like Ubotica being used, the companies even like Sambanova in our portfolio that have a lower, you know, lower burn in terms of power to generate AI so that we can get through. And then the current crunch on energy. And then I think this cap on data centers is a bit like saying we're not going to be part of the future. Ireland is not, we're going to give up our leadership position and we're not going to be a player in AI. I mean, I think that's crazy, Matt. I think that's absolutely nuts. I think we've got to find, we for sure have a problem. I do not deny that. But then we got to come up with a solution and we got to come up with it fast. So okay. Otherwise we will lose out.
Okay, a general point as we come towards a conclusion, is generative AI necessarily always good in what it looks to do? I mean, for ethical considerations, even today I was hearing about a project that Sam Altman's involved in called Strawberry, which apparently brings generative AI onto another level. All it's effectively almost quite sentient computers that will be cleverer than any human. Is that all actually going to be good for us? You're smiling, Sean.
Well, you have to embrace the technology and not run away from it. And you do need to put guardrails around that. And the European Union has done that. You're right. AI is only at the start. The next version of generative AI will potentially, you know, bring it to another level in terms of automation of AI. So I think, like any new technology, it's happening. It's happening around the world. And the economies and the countries that take advantage of that will be the winners. I think Sean made the point before that it's not that AI is going to take your job, but those individuals who understand where AI can add value to your business, whether you're a startup, a scaling or a multinational, they are the ones that will take the growth in the future. And we need to be part of that.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, I think I agree with Patrick that, the genie's out of the bottle, right? So you can't say, oh, you know, we can't use this.
Can't wish it away.
Yeah, it's happened. You can't wish away. It's happened, right? So it's there. Now, absolutely, you know, you need to put, you know, ethical guardrails and so on around it, you know, responsible use and so on, as you do with any technology. But I think you have to, adopt the innovations as they come. But this idea of these ChatGPTs and so on becoming sentient, I mean, really, they're just pattern matching, right? So they're not
pattern
actually...
Pattern matching, what do you mean by that?
They're finding patterns. If you give it a query, you're looking for something, it'll find it for you, right? But there's no actual intelligence there. What's impressive about those? Yeah. But the vector that they're expanding on is scale, right? So they're just making these bigger and bigger and bigger. So they appear to be more intelligent just because they can, you know,
access
find
more
the stuff. They can access it all, but they're still doing it in a very brute force manner. And that's where, actually, again, back to the, you know, the power and so on. Really, there is a huge, huge brute force thing going on here. And that's which is causing this real crunch. And there's going to be, I think, an optimization cycle there where, you know, other, first of all, optimization of the hardware platforms, optimization of the models, but also using other techniques. You know, there are emerging ones of doing much more, you know, things they call biomimicry and things, you know, which is around seeing how the brain actually works rather than just doing this brute force pattern matching. You know, you start to look at how the brain really does things, you know, and actually can be way, way more efficient than some of those approaches. So there's a huge roadmap of innovation here that's going to continue. That's not just about beating it on the hammer to make it bigger, you know.
I think a couple of things. I think I don't worry so much about enterprise use cases, because you can see, I think, the benefits and the productivity. But I do worry about the social impacts of AI, the nefarious actors, it being used for malign purposes, it being used, you know, very negative use cases. So I think regulation is needed for that.
I mean, in fairness, Sean, what you outlined earlier in relation to shipping, all the things were for good.
Yes, exactly.
But there are certain actors who would do that for bad.
Exactly. For
sure. And I think it's very simple. Yeah. When you look at upcoming elections and things.
I mean, exactly. So
disinformation, misinformation.
And deep fakes and voice and all the rest of it. So I think regulation is needed for those use cases. I do have concerns about the social impacts on jobs. I actually think there will be job losses, because I can see call centers, for instance, the massive implication this has for agents, and there already are AI chat agents. So socially and politically, we will need to have upskilling so we don't have, you know, situation that we had, which has caused so much political damage in the US with left behind societies, etc., and all the rest of it. So I think that is actually a huge concern. And then I think about social media and how, look at, we are now 15, 20 years now talking about regulating it. Look at the damage that it did. So I would much rather that we regulate AI sensibly from the outset, that we enable, as you rightly said, it's out. It is out there and there's huge good it can do. But we also have to be very mindful, I think, of the damaging implications of it and make sure that we regulate around those. But we've got to embrace it. Patrick's absolutely right, for those positive use cases.
Elaine Cullen from Atlantic Bridge, Sean Mitchell from Ubotica, and Patrick McNally from Equal One. Thank you all so much for being with us. That's it for this episode of AI Magnified. Again, thanks to all my guests. If you enjoyed our discussion about AI, well, you can join us for a special AI Magnified panel event in association with Fitzgerald Power and AIB on the 14th of November. You can hear from SME leaders on how AI is transforming business operations. Register your interest at fitzgeraldpower.ie/AI event. This series is proudly sponsored by Fitzgerald Power. More than just accountants, Fitzgerald Power is a trusted partner for its clients. The firm is committed to empowering businesses with deeper financial insights, helping them make strategic, informed decisions. So until the next episode, thank you for joining us.
AI Magnified, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly sponsored by Fitzgerald Power. Adding value always. FitzgeraldPower.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.